Hey there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 309. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line. Send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is thisshowissogay. And of course, stroll on over to that Facebook. Type in thisshowissogay. Like us, because we sure as heck like you. What a fun show we have for you this week. We must get started with our guest. Rolla Selbach is an award-winning filmmaker, writer, producer. She wrote and directed Making Maya in 2008. She wrote and directed Three Veils in 2011, which won the awards for Outstanding Artistic Achievement and Best Screenplay at the Film Out San Diego Awards. She wrote and directed the web series Kiss Her, I'm Famous for two glorious seasons, and holy cow, do we all love that web series. She is part of the San Francisco Women's Film Institute Leadership Council and is responsible for creating and producing the San Francisco International Women's Online Film Festival. She's also the creator and host of Girls Guide to Filmmaking, a monthly Spreecast event where she interviews influential women in the film industry. Her newest project is producing a film called Last Black Man in San Francisco, which we're going to chat all about. But first, Rolla, welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
Oh, thank you so much, Ken. I am so happy to be back. I'm so excited. I can't believe 309. Is that right?
It is both enthusiastically and sadly correct. We just keep going.
No, it's just phenomenal. I love your show. I'm a huge, huge fan. Thank you for having me back.
Do you know that it's been over 2 years since you've been on our show?
Really?
I know. It really has. No, I promise you. So, you know, how you been?
Yes, I've been great. I've been fine. I've been just working along and doing chasing my film crack habit, as I
love
like
it.
To call it.
I love it. Well, we have so much to catch up on. Are you ready?
I am ready.
All right. Well, we will start with you as we started with you years ago, but remind our listening audience why the medium of film to get your voice out there.
I love film. I mean, I don't think there's anything more compelling to me anyway, that of a medium that like combines all other mediums, combines music, visuals, acting. It's just the most compelling and most engaging. And it's also the medium that I feel right now anyway connects us the most. It's the most ubiquitous. I'm just absolutely in love with it, and that hasn't stopped. So, you know, hopefully others feel the same, But I just absolutely love the medium. Very close to my heart. So.
Was there a go-to film for you that really inspired you to get into the industry?
Not necessarily a go-to film, but just when I was a kid, so I was growing up in, I grew up in Abu Dhabi, as I think I mentioned last time.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the Middle East, you know, we didn't have movie theaters or anything like that at the time. Of course, now it's way, way different. But
right.
At the time, no, a lot of movie theaters. And so, you know, we had a very healthy black market of VHS tapes.
Nice, nice.
You know, so we'd go over, we'd like get like a little, you know, shawarma sandwich. And I just get like, you know, five or six, you know, a stack of five or six VHS tapes. And I'd go back and I'd just watch and watch and watch, and it just connected me to like other worlds and other people and other characters and other stories and emotions, and it was just a way to get lost in, and I just kept wanting more. And so I wouldn't say there was one specific film, but film in general was just, for me, it was such an important part of growing up.
In so many pieces that you've done, in so many different media in which you've been interviewed, this phrase self-taught comes up. And it is something that separates you from a lot of other filmmakers out there, that your path to film has been a bit different.
Yeah, I mean, you know, different from, I suppose, you know, I mean, everyone has their own path, but
yeah.
I think that different in the sense that at least, you know, I didn't go to film school, certainly
right.
Didn't go to film school. Yeah, but neither did, you know, Soderbergh or Spielberg
right.
or Rodriguez or, you know, I mean, it's, by the way, not even James Cameron went to film school.
Look at that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I think this whole idea of film school, I mean, I appreciate anyone who, you know, goes to further their learning in any capacity. But, you know, but sometimes I feel like it's just so much money, and not money that people don't usually have. You know, I can't spend like $100,000 on, you know, schooling.
Right.
So I'd rather just take that money and make, you know, like 10 short films and a feature or something like that. So that's just my philosophy. Doesn't mean it's the right one, but I always learn by doing, and I can't imagine sitting down and, you know, reading books and making one thesis film. And I don't know. It just seems boring. I'm sorry.
I hear you.
I'm not dogging on it, but it's just I can't do it. And yes, it definitely has been unconventional way to get into film. But I'm proud as anyone else to be here. And I really fought my way to get in. So I'm not about to give that up for any reason.
I want to remind our listening audience that this segment is brought to you by the Rolla Selback Film School, which will be opening in a city near you.
Yeah.
It's coming up soon.
Hey, listen, mark my words. If there is such a thing, trust me, it will not be expensive at all. It will be very accessible. It will be very fun. It will not be exclusive. It will be meant to, like, celebrate and share and, you know, share the knowledge versus, you know, making it be something exclusive and expensive and, you know, elitist. And I don't believe in any of that stuff
anymore. I think it's going to open here in Cleveland. I'm excited. This is going to be your first campus. It's going to be great.
My first campus will be in Abu Dhabi. How about that?
That would be amazing.
Right.
How in touch are you with the filmmaking that is happening overseas?
You know, I try, you know, with the internet, you know, the interwebs, it's such a beautiful thing. I'm just so happy to be in this day and age where we can, you know, connect with our fellow filmmakers and artists all across the world. I try to keep my finger on the pulse, you know, as much as I can. I mean, it's great what's happening over there in the Middle East, you know, like,
yeah.
Different types of expressions and the films coming out of there and the music coming out of there. And I'm so proud. I'm so proud. So
yeah,
I'm just glad to be able to connect, you know, through the interwebs. I don't go there as much as I'd like to. But hopefully that'll change.
Is there a distinctive element that you think connects all of the different projects that you get involved with? Is there something that you are drawn to that you can see in every different project?
You know, that's a good question. I get asked that a lot, and the only thing I can say is I'm really drawn to content that, you know, that kind of pushes the envelope a bit, but also that entertains. You know, like, for instance, I would say pushes the envelope. You'd be like, oh, yeah, like Three Veils, of course, and or even like, you know, Last Black Man in San Francisco that I'm producing. But then you'd be like, oh, how about like Kiss Her, I'm Famous? Like, that doesn't seem like it's, you know, pushing any boundaries. But at the same time, you know, in the end, like, I just want people to go through a journey that I feel like I myself would want to go through. I think that's the only thing I can do is stay true to my taste, you know, and hope that others have that same taste. You know, it's really just kind of, I always say taste is something that you can't teach. It's something that you have, and mm-hmm. something that you can develop. And, you know, the good news is, again, like, through the interwebs, you can find people who have that same taste and who enjoy it and who are appreciative of it, and some that aren't, certainly. But yeah, so I would say just things that are compelling, things that are not just the norm, the mainstream, some things that are different, you know?
Yeah.
I can't put my finger on it. I don't really know. Oh, the other thing I will say, though, I will say that I'm a huge proponent of putting underrepresented characters up on screen. And that's something that's very much, almost every single project I've ever, like, had a hand in, whether it's, like, women or whether it's, you know, minorities or whether it's, you know, character going through something, or whether it's queerness or anything like that. I'm a big proponent of putting that on screen and celebrating it and opening the minds of others. So
we've had some amazing conversations in the past, you know, past 6-7 years with female filmmakers and talking about the distinctive challenges of being a woman behind the lens. And then we've had separate conversations just with out filmmakers and separate conversations with filmmakers who are people of color. And then you stroll along and, you know, you are a queer Arab American woman behind the lens. That seems to be a very particular experience.
Particular is a good way to say it, certainly. Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of a unicorn, but I think that hopefully there are others like me out there that are coming up, and I think that that's great. I think, you know, being a kind of a triple minority, as I call myself, definitely has its insights, right? I'm very, very proud and very happy to be who I am. And to be honest, you know, it's like, oh, well, does that inform everything you do? Well, who you are informs everything you do, certainly.
Yeah.
But I'm not just queer. I'm not just, you know, a woman. I'm not just Arab American. I'm so many other things. So hopefully, you know, hopefully, yeah, that's definitely something that people will notice right off the bat. But hopefully that's not the reason why. That's not the only reason why they're interested in my work or in me. You know what I'm saying?
No, that would be the incredible content you're putting out there, which let's talk about some of that. Girl's Guide to Filmmaking. I've watched, you know, many a minute of that. It's very enjoyable.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, that was kind of a passion project. It was kind of a risk, you know, because I definitely don't belong in front of the camera, I don't think. Meaning I don't feel the most comfortable in front of the camera, you know. I don't have my lenses and my cameras to hide behind. So that was like kind of it was a different experience for me, certainly. But I loved sitting down with fellow female filmmakers I admired, you know, in their own space, in their own creative space, whether it was their home or their studio, or and just having like kind of a, you know, candid conversation and a chat. And I ended up connecting with the most phenomenally, you know, compelling people, and I was just so thankful to be able to go through that. And and I'm glad I did it, because I was really trepidatious at first. I really didn't want to, but then I'm like, you know what? You know, it's why not? You know, why the f*** not?
Yeah.
I will
say, and my hope is I'm not the first to tell you this, one of the great things about watching that is that you are so clearly inspired by the conversations that you're having, and it's very authentic. It's really great to watch.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I have no acting experience, so, you know. I can't be anything but sincere at that point. So there's definitely times. I remember there's a specific episode where I met, I don't know if you saw it, but I met my idol, Guinevere Turner. I don't know if you saw that.
I didn't see that one.
Yeah, yeah. So Guinevere Turner, as your audiences might know, wrote American Psycho.
Yeah.
She, you know, she created and was in and wrote Go Fish, and many, many other classics, of course. And it's funny, because I remember when, you know, when I was first trying to teach myself how to write, originally I was just going to be a screenwriter. I'm like, oh, there's no way I can direct. I don't know how, you know. But I can write. Writing seems, you know, like something I could do. So I went to the library, back when people went to the library, and I would just pull books, you know, literally, like how to screen write, you know, 101 or whatever. And I remember I pulled out a few books. One of them was Tales from the Script. And I remember Guinevere Turner was the only woman writer in the book. And her and I think one other. And so Every independent filmmaking book I would pick up, she was probably one of two, you know, females in the book, other than, you know, 20 or 50 other dudes. And so I'd have these books where I would just like dog ear everywhere she was in. You know, this was obviously when I was way younger. And so she, you know, I kept thinking, you know, if she can do it, I can do it. If she can do it, I can do it. And I finally got to meet her. And, you know, it's just crazy how I can't even tell you how surreal it is to be like in your hero's, like, you know, apartment in their like writing space, like talking about like, you know, how they like, you know, wrote their last project, or, you know, looking at their notes or looking at the scribbles on their table, or like, you're in there. And it was my favorite episode, and it was the last episode that we shot. And to this day, it was probably one of the most surreal moments of my life. And in the episode itself, I had her autograph that specific Tales from the Script book where I had dog-eared, you know, like years and years and years ago. And it just kind of came full circle that way. And it was just one of those moments that you chase, you know, for all your life. And when you finally get it, it's, you know, it's like, okay, I could die now. Yeah, I think I could die.
I know that it didn't make the final cut, but when she caught you going through her medicine cabinet, how did you extricate yourself? Like, did you play it out well?
Yeah, no, it was...
I feel like the director's cut is going to have her saying, Rola, can you not be under my blanket? That's weird. I'll autograph the text if you get out from under my blanket. I just want to let people know how this all came about. So I'm just putting it out there. Just putting it out there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm pretty, yes, there's probably a lot that I didn't, yes, I, okay. Okay, full disclosure, I do, you know, I did edit all of the episodes, so I had a hand in what I did or did not show about my complete, like, craziness that day, but I'm not about to divulge it to you.
Okay.
We've only met twice. So.
Let me just tell you this.
On the phone.
This is why I do radio, though, because, you know, the Indigo Girls can't see me just crying when I'm on the phone with them. You know, like, this is yeah, why I do radio. Yeah. You're the foolish one who's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to capture it on film. I don't do that. I'm trying to help you out.
And I appreciate it. And honestly, you should have helped me out before I did it.
Yeah, well.
Because I was a complete mess. But hopefully she, you know, she doesn't. I'm sure she gets it all the time. So
aren't those fun moments? Anyone. Like, where I feel like I've had interviews with my heroes where I feel like essentially all I said was, you're so pretty. You know, I don't even know what comes out of my mouth half the time. It's good times.
Yeah.
Well,
I end up saying awesome a lot.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, totally.
Oh, my God. I hate that when you have your go-to word. I'm just like, oh, awesome, awesome. Like, stop saying awesome. Stop saying awesome. Like,
mine is nice. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's nice. Like, I'm some surfer dude and not a gay Jew from Jersey. Like, it's the weirdest thing. Well, look, not only am I going to help you not drool when you meet more heroes of yours, but we want to help you with the fundraising for Last Black Man in San Francisco. Again, listeners, we are here with award-winning filmmaker Rola Selbach. Tell everybody how you came to be involved with Last Black Man in San Francisco.
Yeah. So Last Black Man in San Francisco is a feature film that I am currently producing, and it is a project that I really, really, really believe is going to put its thumbprint on our American pop culture, I think, for years to come. I really, really do believe that. And back in early December, I had met with the director, Joe Talbot, and you know, he had this project and he was thinking about it, and we just, you know, went back and forth, and I read the script, and it was one of the most interesting, complex, entertaining, tragic, beautiful and hilarious pieces I had ever read.
Wow.
And I said, listen, I don't know where you're at in terms of this film, but I want to be a part of it no matter what. I want to help you make it, and I want to see this through. And he said, oh, that's so funny. I was hoping you'd say that. I'm looking for a producer. So it kind of just came together. And the film means, so the film is, it's a story essentially about two outcasts trying to find their way in a rapidly changing city that seems to have left them both behind. And so it's a story about friendship. It's a story about, you know, it's a coming of age story, but it's also, of course, a story about kind of what's happening all over the country in terms of people being pushed out of what they used to call home. And imagine being nostalgic for a place that you haven't even left yet. There's just such beauty and such tragedy and such truth and such entertainment in this film. And I really, really can't wait to show it to people. So we're currently in the raising funds stage. And for those who are listening, please don't put mute or turn down your volume yet. I know it's very annoying to hear such things, but trust me. All I'm asking you to do is just go to lastblackman.com, take a look at the teaser trailer we have there, go to our Kickstarter, And only if you don't find those two pieces of video, some of the most entertaining pieces of video that you have seen all year, only if you do find that, then please, any amount of support or love that you can give would be amazing.
So good. So good. Again, you can just stroll on over to Kickstarter.com and you can access it that way. I love just the media that I've watched on this. And you're doing pretty well. You're doing pretty well. You're going to make $50,000. I'm not worried about that at all. What does it mean to you to even have the hundreds and hundreds of backers that you already have?
It means the world. It means absolute world. And even more than the backers, it's the backers plus the notes that they send. So even if, you know, even if someone gave a dollar, you know, I mean, you know, people are in different points in their life. Some people can give, some people can't. But the most beautiful part are the notes and the connections that we've gotten from people who have reached out. You know, even people who are saying, look, I can't pay. I don't have my paycheck this week, but I just want you to know that I loved what I watched and we're with you and we hope that this movie comes out. We also had a great event actually last Thursday in San Francisco, and we're hoping to do maybe a few events like this throughout the country, but where it was just literally a huge, you know, party with the Last Black Man in San Francisco party, where we just wanted to thank everyone and connect with people and shake hands and have a drink with all the people who have supported us thus far. It wasn't a fundraiser. It wasn't a, you know, we weren't asking people for anything. We just wanted to literally be able to, you know, give a fist bump to the people who have been supporting us thus far, whether through Kickstarter or whether through, you know, emails or tweets or Facebook posts or anything like that. So we're just very thankful and very humbled at the outpouring of support so far. So we couldn't be happier.
And there are rewards, folks. You can stroll on over. You can see them. We're going to link to them. But there are rewards. We love having access to these projects. And then getting a little piece of the action is so fun, too. So you can see it on Kickstarter. You can stroll on over to lastblackmanfilm.com. I have put together some roll a sell back ephemera for you from your past that I would like to get some reflections on. Are you ready?
Oh my goodness! Sure.
This is a little. It's a
okay.
little. It's a little.
I'm delighted. What is
oh
this?
Yeah, no, this is fun. I found all these fun things about you that I want to talk about that have absolutely nothing to do with this conversation. So it's great. I'm excited. So we're going to flashback. I'm telling you, this is the kind of mood I'm in this week. We're going to flashback to 1998. You did something that I love when people do. Roll a cell back a Portland State University orientation leader.
Oh my God, is this being recorded? Ken, Ken, what are you doing? Oh my goodness, why did I agree to this?
Oh, this is nothing. You should hear the other three we're going to get to. I love it. Look, I am a former dean of students. I love when people are orientation leaders. I feel like your whole success of your career traced back to that.
Yes, well, I was a big nerd. And also, I have terrible sense of direction, so I have no clue how I was able to be orientation leader. But I did have friends doing it, and so I just thought it'd be fun as well.
Okay, there you go. It's a resume builder. Okay, now, I mentioned during your intro, yes, you've won film awards, but you've also won... I have to read this, and you are not to interrupt me because it's one of the funniest things that I've ever read on the show in the history of the show. And as you highlighted, this is episode 309, so this is hilarious. I learned that one of your many recognitions is you are the award winner for Home Products Group's Engineering Group Recognition Award, which is in recognition, I'm not kidding, listeners, of outstanding performance in the development and deployment of Blue River, Yangtze Demo, DTH Signs of Life, Clear Creek, and Tularosa. Am I wrong? That is the most amount of time, listeners, that I've ever spent saying something that I did not understand, but I wanted to highlight that that's a part of your past.
Sorry, who are you doing this for, me or you?
Oh, at this point, it's totally
for me.
Oh, no, I'm having a blast. I don't, you know, you were going through some lady's medicine cabinet. I'm just trying to help here. But you do have this very technical background, which is, it's really great, you know, that I'm sure that lends itself well to being in an industry that has these technical elements, right?
Yeah, actually, it's funny because I'm a huge total nerd, and I definitely I wear my geek flag pretty proudly. Yeah, that was actually the first award that I'd ever won.
Of course, it was. Yeah,
in the tech industry. Yeah, it was.
Yeah,
it was a big deal.
Yeah, no, I think that they simulcast that ceremony. Please say that there is a paperweight of some sort. Is there? It better not just be a certificate that someone printed out. I want a paperweight of some sort.
Well, actually, it's like this weird, you know, it's like those weird, like, you know, awkwardly cut, like, crystals that's, like,
yes.
jagged edges.
I'm okay with
whatever.
That.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's like that, and it's in the box somewhere, like,
right.
in the garage.
Well, I don't know why that's not on the mantle. Okay, so that's number two. By the way, this is number two of four. Number three, you and I have already discussed, but I want to remind everyone that it's not just a filmmaker, but also DJ Rolio X, which is just fun to say. Just want to put that out there. But we discussed that years ago. Now, for point number four, you're like, I'm never doing another interview. Okay, point number four. These are things that are out there about you. Now, this is from your own voice. I did not write what I'm going to say now. This is from a Facebook status, and I would like you to explain it further. We're all about accountability here on this show, It's So Gay. And I quote... Lost in 90s and 2000s dance music. Seriously, if you don't find me in a few days, I'll be on the floor with my headphones cracked out on music. Our listening audience would like to know, what was your go-to? I don't care about the 2000s. I want to hear 90s dance music. What is your go-to?
Okay, two words. Crystal Waters.
Crystal Waters.
Dude, come on. Come on.
Wow.
Dude, come on.
I feel... No, of course you do. That just took me back, though, right?
You see? There's something about 90s dance music, man. There was nothing like it. It was just the most joyful, the most, like, empowering, the most fun. You could be in the mood of all time, and you could put on some Crystal Waters, and you'd be getting up, no matter what. I don't care who you are.
Crystal Waters.
I know that's true about you, Kent.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Honestly, though, that took me back. I feel like it's 1998 and I'm an orientation leader all over again. Which I will just tell you, I'm not kidding you, 1998, I was also an orientation leader. We were having a shared experience.
No.
I swear to you. Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Are you serious? Okay, this is kind of cool. Which university or college?
Oh, I was an NYU orientation leader, and shortly thereafter became an RA, and I was an RA for 4 years. That's totally me.
Wow.
1998 awesome. Orientation leader. No, that's me and you.
See, I'm in good company, man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh, company. Yeah. We both are. All right, listeners, there are so many different places you guys need to go. First, you can stroll on over to rollaselback.com, and there's all this great information about her. You can click on the awards, though you're not going to get some of the awards that I've already talked about, but there are other awards on there, too, that you can learn about. You can, of course, stroll on over to Kickstarter. I like the way you said it. Go first to lastblackmanfilm.com, and you can watch a clip there, and then that will link you directly to the Kickstarter, and you can watch another media clip there. And I dare you, listeners, to watch these clips and not want to contribute some amount of money, because you can immediately tell, Roland, and you said it, but I know that you like hearing it from other people too, because it's just so true. This does represent a different voice in film, and this is one of those films that really does need to be out there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for saying that, man. That means a lot. That means a lot, and hopefully your audiences feel that as well.
Yeah. So, everybody, this is what we do these days. We support these projects, because if we don't support these projects, we can't go out there and complain that our voices are not being represented out there, because there are these opportunities, just like this one, that Rola and all her fellow filmmakers and all the folks working on this project are providing for us to directly influence the content that is out there in the world. So, yes, you can complain that the films aren't there, but here's the opportunity for you to contribute to it. So I urge you, listeners, to get out there and doing it. Rola, can we not let another 2 years go by before you're back on the show?
Oh, we must not.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely. I would love to get back on. And next time I'll have, you know, three or four things about you that I would have found out.
I would like to remind our listeners, this is Rola's last appearance on this show is So Gay. It's very sad. Very sad. It was great while you were here. Rola, we love having you on. You are supporting projects that we all want to see, and there is nothing greater than that. You are putting your voice out there, and you're raising up other voices. And on behalf of all of our listeners, we're just so thankful for everything you're doing.
Oh, thank you, Kim, man. It means a lot. Thank you.
Come on, Annie. Let's go to the movies.
Let's go see the stars.
Cowboy heroes, cops and robbers, glamour and stars.
Greta Garbo is probably crying while Robert Taylor is locked in her dying embrace. Chico and Groucho and Chaplin and Lloyd are all super. Sweet Mickey Mouse, Shirley Temple, and dear Jackie Cooper.
Let's go to the movies. Let's go see the stars.
Fred and Ginger spinning madly.
Songs and romance.
Life is a dance. Sitting in the darkness. Popcorn on your knee. Give the maid the night off.
Turn the kitchen light off.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we have tons of time left on this week's episode to talk all about the latest LGBT news out there. We must start, of course, with Ireland. Ireland, holy cow. Ireland citizens voted in a landslide, in a total and complete landslide, to legalize same-sex marriage. Electoral officials made this announcement official on Saturday. It was a stunningly lopsided result that illustrates what Catholic leaders and rights activists alike call a, quote, social revolution. The referendum saw 62.1% of Irish voters say yes to changing the nation's constitution to define marriage as a union between two people, regardless of their sex. Outside Dublin Castle, watching the results announcement in its cobblestone courtyard, thousands and thousands of gay rights activists cheered, hugged, and cried at the news. There's no way that I could begin to cover this. There's so many different angles. There were celebrities that were tweeting about it. The Vatican said it was disappointing. They said it was a defeat. Prime Minister Enda Kenny, he proclaimed, quote, "With today's vote, we have disclosed who we are, a generous, compassionate, bold, and joyful people." I love that. And when he proclaimed that, next to him were Deputy Prime Minister Joan Burton, who also declared the victory a, quote, "magical moving moment when the world's beating heart is in Ireland." How nice is that? A magical moving moment when the world's beating heart is in Ireland. Ireland is the first country to approve gay marriage in a popular national vote. 19 other countries, including most U.S. states, have legalized the practice through their legislatures and courts. But this is the first time through a vote. The unexpectedly strong percentage of approval surprised really everybody. More than 1.2 million Irish voters backed the yes side to less than 750,000 voting no. Only one of Ireland's 43 constituencies recorded a narrow no majority, and that was Roscommon South Leitrim, which is in the Boggy Midlands. I love that. It's like right out of Macbeth, but it's a really thing. Roscommon South Leitrim, which is in the Boggy Midlands. Lovely. Analysts credited the yes side with adeptly employing social media to mobilize young first-time voters, tens of thousands of whom voted for the first time on Friday. This was their first time voting. Then they got to change the constitution to make it more inclusive. The yes campaign also featured moving personal stories from prominent Irish people, either coming out as gay or describing their hopes for their gay children. That helped convince wavering voters to back equal marriage rights. It's so incredible. I love this story. And you had all of the tales of all of the Irish citizens that were flying back in time to vote. It was just really well covered. It was really well covered. I will say, it was a little bit of a bizarre juxtaposition, because when Ireland voted on Saturday, you know, when it came out that Ireland was going to change their constitution to include the rights for everyone to marry, it was at the same time as here in Cleveland, right here in Cleveland, when the Brelo, the police officer, was charged with manslaughter for climbing on top of a car during a police shootout chase and just emptying many, many tens and dozens of bullets into two people in the car. Well, he was found not guilty, and that happened at exactly the same time. So it was so bizarre to me to see this juxtaposition with all of this joy. So I have, you know, my Facebook feed is pretty much gay people and Cleveland people, and then some people from my past and whatnot, but it's mostly gay people and Cleveland people. people, like gay folks who listen to the show or who I've had on as guests, and then Cleveland folks, people who I've met since I've moved here. And it was just so bizarre to see that juxtaposition of all of the joy of Ireland and celebrating Ireland, but then right next to, you know, interspersed with all of the indignation and protest and disappointment and outrage at what's going on here in Cleveland. So very bizarre for me to see that. But yeah, Saturday was a big day. There's a great op-ed over on theadvocate.com. It's called How We'll End Conversion Therapy in 4 Years Flat. It's written by Sarah Ames, who is the Born Perfects campaign coordinator and staff attorney at the National Center for Lesbian Rights. And I urge you to go check it out. Again, it's called How We'll End Conversion Therapy in 4 Years Flat. And she writes in here, the fight to end conversion therapy 3 years ago suddenly shifted gears to light speed, and survivors all across the country have begun joining forces with advocates to take down their abusers. Since California's Senate Bill 1172 was signed into law, conversion therapists have been held accountable for the damage they have wrought in courtrooms, state legislatures, Congress, the United Nations, and even the White House. And in here, she outlines this plan for, again, just getting rid of conversion therapy in 4 years flat. It's a great piece, and I love the attention there. I will say, in this piece, she specifically says, quote, in June 2014, the National Center for Lesbian Rights launched the hashtag Born Perfect campaign with the ambitious goal of ending conversion therapy in 5 years. At the time, it seemed like a daunting and maybe even impossible undertaking, but 1 year later, we can see the contours of that day on the horizon. Exciting stuff. So that's what's happening with conversion therapy. I don't want to talk too much about the Duggars, the, you know, 42 kids and counting folks. I will say that with all the scandal with Josh Duggar, who has now, it has been revealed that he molested 5 underage girls in his teen years more than a decade ago, you do have all of the LGBT rights activists coming out and saying, wait a second, these are the same folks who are decrying that gay people are not fit to be parents. And this is what we now find. So it's hypocrisy left, right, up, and down. At the end of last week, on an episode of All In with Chris Hayes, author and LGBT advocate Dan Savage, he made an appearance to discuss the story that really continues to unfold. He highlighted the hypocrisy demonstrated by the Duggar family, who have peddled their anti-LGBT agenda and activism as a means of protecting families. Dan Savage said this, quote, particularly when religious conservatives want to talk about it, they want to point a finger at non-family. They want to point a finger at people that they define as enemies of families or not from or having families of their own. LGBT people, particularly trans people, increasingly with these anti-trans bathroom bills. And that is what the Duggars have dug in on, is attacking trans people and opposing this LGBT civil rights bill in Fayetteville, where they were out there arguing that the threat to little girls in Fayetteville were trans women when they knew, when they were covering for someone who had demonstrated, at least at that age, was a threat to little girls himself. You can watch the full episode online of All In with Chris Hayes, but Dan Savage making some really strong statements. New Orleans, turning our attention to New Orleans. New Orleans Mayor Mitch Landrieu wants the world to know that despite Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal's anti-gay conscience protection order, the good times are still rolling for LGBT people and everyone else in the Big Easy. As we covered last week, Governor Jindal issued an executive order that essentially puts the state's Marriage and Conscience Act into effect after legislators failed to pass it. Well, the mayor of New Orleans issued an executive order of his own saying that New Orleans will not tolerate discrimination. He said this, quote, the purpose of this executive order is to confirm for the residents of the city of New Orleans, its businesses and visitors, that religious beliefs are protected from unjustified governmental burden, but that there is no tolerance in the city of New Orleans for discrimination on the basis of race, creed, national origin, or ancestry, color, religion, gender, or sex, sexual orientation, gender identification, marital or domestic partner status, age, physical condition, or disability. That's what the order reads. reads, Mayor Landrieu said in a press release, quote, with this executive order, I am issuing a clarifying call to the nation that New Orleans is an accepting, inviting city that thrives on its diversity and welcomes people from all walks of life with open arms. In New Orleans, we believe religious liberty and freedoms should be protected and discrimination prohibited, and we have passed our own laws to reflect that principle. This executive order is an important symbolic affirmation that discrimination in any form will not be tolerated in New Orleans, and it should not be tolerated anywhere in Louisiana. So Governor Jindal getting some pushback there. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Now, we did cover the story last week of the University of California, the UCLA grad student who was responsible for that now widely discredited study on attitudes towards gay marriage, that he lied about the funding grants given for his fraudulent research. According to The New Yorker, he received no funding at all for his study, which was published last December in Science magazine and discredited really just all over the place. He received no funding for it. This study, just to remind you, it was centered on whether views on same-sex marriage change due to interaction with gay individuals, and it just gets more and more discredited. But I think the interesting piece of this and the blowback that has come this week are just folks reminding everybody else, particularly our canvassers, our activists, that does not mean don't have these conversations. Yeah, this study turned out to be bogus, but please, please continue to have these interactions. So, wow, bad research. We don't like when bad research happens. It's not a good thing. There was a hilarious story. 5-year-old Yasmin Fariki, she didn't feel like doing her homework. She insisted she wanted to write to President Obama instead, and he wrote back. Okay? She wrote a handwritten note to him. She said this, quote, please stop war for our world. Instead, have a meeting. Please give a speech to tell everyone they can marry who they want. Okay? So then the commander-in-chief, President Obama, he replied to this letter on Twitter. Her aunt posted on Twitter, and President Obama replied on Twitter and said this, quote, tell your niece I really like her letter. I couldn't agree more. I love it. This is President Obama through Twitter, just, you know, affirming his stance on same-sex marriage. And, you know, he should be getting rid of war, too. That'd be a good thing. So there you go. There you go. The Boy Scouts of America. Gosh, we've covered the Boy Scouts of America quite a bit over the past 7 years. It seems to be changing, folks. It seems to be changing. An announcement by the leader of the Boy Scouts of America may set in motion myriad changes to the 100-plus-year-old group and lead to even more polarization, it might happen, on the issue of gay rights versus traditional values. Robert Gates, the president of the Boy Scouts of America, and he's also the former Secretary of Defense, he recently called on his organization to end their ban on gay adult leaders, warning the group's executives that, quote, we must deal with the world as it is, not as we might wish it to be. According to the Associated Press, the national president of the Boy Scouts of America said this week that the organization's ban on participation by openly gay adults is no longer sustainable and called for change in order to avert potential legal battles. In a speech in Atlanta to the Scouts' national annual meeting, Robert Gates referred to recent moves by Scout councils in New York City and elsewhere to defy the ban. He said this, quote, the status quo in our movement's membership standards cannot be sustained. This is a huge shift. He said no change in the policy would be made at the national meeting, but he raised the possibility of revising the policy at some point so that local scout organizations could decide on their own whether to allow gays as leaders. Why are we doing it that way? Why are we polarizing it in that way and allowing the individual troops to decide this? We're just going to see this happen along geographical lines. That's very silly. For an executive director of an organization who wants to hold his organization together, make a rule, man. Don't leave it up to individual. These are not the United States where you get to leave it up to individual states to make these decisions, because we see that that doesn't work out so well as it comes to putting, you know, minority rights up for these majority votes. Just make a policy across the board. across the board. So, unsurprisingly, his comments have elicited response all over the place, all over the spectrum. Marhana Hulit, who is a crew advisor for the venturing program for the Boy Scouts Grand Teton Council, said this quote, "I am very happy with the statement and I'm very supportive of this move. Gays can openly serve in the military. Same-sex marriage is legal in most states and now they can serve in the Boy Scouts. A few years ago, the Scouts opened their doors to gay youth, so this is just a natural progression." So there you go. We'll see what happens. We will see what happens now with the Boy Scouts of America. Of course, I should say on the other side, there were some other responses. Archie Shepard, a scout committee chairman for the Pocatello area and a former Boy Scout himself, said this quote, "This is not the kind of thing we want to do. Why put the Boy Scouts in the same position as the Catholic Church, which has spent millions of dollars to fight lawsuits after inappropriate action by some members of the priesthood?" That's a little bit bizarre. He went on to say that there's no benefit to letting openly gay male leaders into the Boy Scouts. He said this quote, "To each their own, I say, but keep it to yourself. Why force the majority to cater to a very small minority? I've been involved in scouting for more than 50 years. So if my leaders say this is the new policy, I will listen, but I am not happy about it." So yeah, I get what you're saying in that to each his own, I say, but keep it to yourself. Yes. They will keep it to themselves in the same way that in the Boy Scouts, within reason, people keep their sexual orientation to themselves, be they straight, be they gay, be they bisexual. Now, if you have a picnic and you're allowing everyone to bring their partner, then yeah, let the gay leader bring his partner. Other than that, it doesn't come up in the not tying badge. It doesn't come up in the service badge. I don't know any other badges. That's as far as I can take that one. But it just doesn't come up in that way. So yes, to each their own, I say keep it to yourself. That's fine. Make that the rule. Make that the standard, because that's what the standard is now. But that shouldn't then bar gay leaders from serving. Doesn't make any sense. So weird. So weird. Hey, Marco Rubio. Our friend Marco Rubio. He's a treat. He's a treat. He wants to just keep talking about gay marriage. He laments that opponents of gay marriage are labeled homophobe or hater, which, by the way, they're not labeled homophobe or hater if they're just opponents of gay marriage. They probably are articulating things that are homophobic or hate-filled. That's when we label them homophobic or hater. Republican presidential candidate Marco Rubio told the Christian Broadcasting Network that the push for nationwide same-sex marriage represents a threat to Christianity. He said this quote, "We are at the water's edge of the argument that mainstream Christian teaching is hate speech, because today we've reached the point in our society where if you do not support same-sex marriage, you are labeled a homophobe and a hater. So what's the next step after that? After they're done going after individuals, the next step is to argue that the teachings of mainstream Christianity, that the Catholic Church, that it's all hate speech, and that's a real and present danger." Wow. So yeah, that's not at all what's happening right now. When people do say homophobic things, they are often labeled as homophobic. When people do say hate-filled things, they're often labeled as haters. But just because they are opposed to same-sex marriage, that's not necessarily the case that they're labeled homophobic. So kind of silly there. There is one more piece out there that you have to go check out. It's an op-ed. It's called, "I am the mother of a gay son, and I've taken enough from you good people." It's an incredible op-ed. You can find it in Deep South Daily, which is a forward-thinking journalism site from the heart of the American South. It is by Ashton Pittman. And it's very long, but it's very, very engaging, and you should go check it out. I think it's all right there in the title. "I am the mother of a gay son, and I've taken enough from you good people." Go read it. It'll change some of your thinking, or it'll confirm it. It will either change it, or it'll confirm it, and it'll be good. So go check that out. And finally, and I have to give him a shout-out because he's my hero. He is my hero. There was a Harvey Milk breakfast that attracted thousands of folks. More than 1,000 San Diegans gathered for breakfast late last week to honor Harvey Milk at a celebratory event for the late gay rights activist. It's billed as the largest of its kind in the nation, this breakfast. Politicians, LGBT rights advocates, business representatives, educators, and others packed a ballroom at the Hilton San Diego Bayfront to honor the slain San Francisco supervisor at the 7th annual Harvey Milk Diversity Breakfast. Speakers paid tribute to Milk and his legacy. They also speculated about what issues he would be fighting if he were alive to celebrate his 85th birthday. It was just his 85th birthday. The list covered marriage and income equality, a cure for HIV and AIDS, bullying and suicide prevention for transgender Americans, and justice for black men at the hands of law enforcement, among others. San Diego Mayor Kevin Falconer said the diverse cross-section of the community at the breakfast represented the best of San Diego. He reaffirmed his own commitment to marriage equality, an issue that the Supreme Court's going to rule on probably in a couple weeks. He said this, quote, the mayor of San Diego, quote, "This is an issue that celebrates families of all kinds. All people deserve the right to marry the person they love." The event celebrated the life of Harvey Milk. Just for some background, if you guys don't know about Harvey Milk, he's so much more than you saw in the movie Milk. Though if you know nothing about Harvey Milk, sure, go get the Sean Penn movie. He won an Oscar for it. It's a great movie. But I urge you to, if you're going to take a step up from watching Milk, the Hollywood one, then I would watch the documentary, the Oscar-winning documentary from the early 80s, The Life and Times of Harvey Milk. It's an amazing documentary. But what I really think you should do, it sits on my bedside. If you're wondering to yourself, what book stays on Ken's bedside table? I know that you're wondering that. Well, the only book that stays always, always on my bedside table is The Mayor of Castro Street. And it's Randy Schiltz. And Randy Schiltz, the same journalist who wrote And the Band Played On. And I know he wrote a book, too, about gays serving in the military. But the two that I read are And the Band Played On, which had a huge effect on me when I was growing up. But then the book that stays on my bedside table is The Mayor of Castro Street. And you will get no more full picture of Harvey Milk than reading The Mayor of Castro Street. If you've read it and you want to just talk about it, send me an email. I'm always willing to talk about it. Send an email on over to Ken at theshowisogay.com. He's a flawed leader, and I love it. He is not on this pedestal of being, oh gosh, he is the virtuous man we should all strive to be. Harvey Milk was someone who said, I am a flawed leader, and I love him all the more for it. And you really get the full picture of Harvey Milk. There's so much that isn't in the Hollywood motion picture Milk, and there's a ton that's not in the documentary, The Life and Times of Harvey Milk. But if you pick up The Mayor of Castro Street, I happen to like the writing style as well. I like books by journalists. I find them to be extraordinarily engaging. I think that's the kind of writing I was weaned on. So I love that kind of newspaper writing. It is so, so incredible. The Mayor of Castro Street, your summer beach reading. Go pick it up. And that is your unsolicited recommendation, a little bit of revelation on what's on my bedside table, and also the end of this week's episode. Fun stuff. Our thanks, of course, to filmmaker Rolla Selback. Just love her. Just adore her. She's such a treat to have on the show. She's putting that content out there. You guys cannot complain that Hollywood is not doing enough, that there are not filmmakers out there trying to put our stories on screen, because they are trying to do it. They just need our help. So stroll on over to her Kickstarter and help out with that film right there. We have amazing content coming at you in the next couple weeks. I'm so excited for some guests that I can't even tell you about right now. For now, you guys, go do what it is that you do. If you want to do something that gets you to be a guest on a show, I'd love to hear from you. Send an email on over to Ken at theshowisogay.com, or just keep listening, because that supports our guests as well. Get out there, go use your voice the way you know how to use it to make a difference for your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters. And while you're out there making a difference, while you're out there using your voice, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
is no reason for you to hide. It's so hard staying here all alone. You could be taking me for a ride. She could drag me over the rainbow, send me away, down by the river, a shot, my baby, down by the river, dead. Smash.